From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. Generally, Love to Love is a show that is quite light with lots of music and easy discussions or stories, something that you can listen to in a relaxed state after a nice meal. But today, we are attempting on a very deep topic. The topic is Atma Ramayana. Now, you must be wondering, I have heard of Valmiki Ramayana, Adhyatma Ramayana, Kamba Ramayana, Tulasi Ramayana, the list goes on and on. So what is this new Atma Ramayana? The story of Ramayana in a nutshell starts with King Dasharatha, who had three queens, Kausalya, Kaikeyi and Sumitra, but they had no children and hence does the Putraka Meshti Yaga and as a result gets four sons, Rama, Bharata, Lakshmana and Shatrughna. To fast forward the story, Rama gets married to Mother Sita, who was the daughter of King Janaka. Now just before the coronation of Rama as the king of Ayodhya, the maid of Queen Kaikeyi, named Manthara, poisons the mind of Kaikeyi and as a result, Rama is sent to exile and he is accompanied by his brother Lakshmana and his wife Sita. Now while they are in the forest, Sita is abducted by the demon king Ravana. Now Rama and Lakshmana, who are crestfallen, go in search of Sita and they meet Hanuman and Sugriva. Sugriva, with the help of Rama, defeats his brother Vali and becomes the king of Kishkindha. Now with the help of Sugriva and his monkey army, Rama goes to Lanka, defeats Ravana and is reunited with Mother Sita and finally he is coronated as the king of Ayodhya and they all lived happily ever after. Well, not really, but just for the sake of our story, let us end it there. Now Swami says, Ramayana is not just a story that happened thousands of years ago and had an end. Right now, in each and every person's life, a Ramayana is being played in the three gunas, the 10 senses, in our search and the spiritual practices. And that he calls the Atma Ramayana. Such beautiful and profound words. So now let's take a look at how all these are related, the characters in Ramayana and the three gunas and the 10 senses and the search and the spiritual practices. How are all these related? Now Swami says, Dasharatha represents the 10 senses. The three queens are representations of the three gunas of Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Rama represents Atma. Sita represents Brahma Jnana. Lakshmana is the intellect. Hanuman is courage. Sugriva is discrimination. Ravana is again Rajas. Kumbhakarna is Tamas. And Vibhishana is Sattvaguna. So with that introduction to the whole concept, now let's now get into the details. With me in the studios is Brother Sai Giridhar, a research scholar from the Department of Chemistry, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Prashanthi Nilayam Campus. He is very passionate about the scriptures and he is my go-to man whenever I need any clarification on the Ramayana. So dear listeners, let's all dive deep into the Atma Ramayana. Sai Ram Sai Giridhar, welcome to Love to Love.
Sai Ram Chandu.
You know, a few months ago, we did have a discussion on the story of Ramayana and how that story, a story that happened thousands of years ago, how it is so relevant in the modern times. The relationship that existed between brothers, between friends, how that has so much to teach the modern generation where everything has become so superfluous.
Absolutely.
Today, let us delve into Ramayana once again at a much deeper level. You know, Swami, in his Ramkatha Rasa Vahini, which is going to be the basis of our discussion today, and some of the other discourses and the book Sandeha Nivarini, in Ramkatha Rasa Vahini chapter 1, that is, chapter is titled Rama, Prince and Principle, Swami says, and I quote, "Don't look upon Rama as a scion of the Solar dynasty, the sovereign of the kingdom of Ayodhya, or the son of Emperor Dasharatha. These correlates are but accessory and accidental. This error has become habitual in modern readers. They pay attention only to the personal relationship and affiliations between the characters of the story they read. They don't delve into the values they represent and demonstrate. Dasharatha, Rama's father, had three wives. The first was such and such. The second was of this nature. The third had these traits. Her maids were of this ugly type. Now, these are the discussions that people have now.
The usual gossip.
Yes, the usual gossip. People read it like a novel. And the wars fought by Dasharatha were characterized by these peculiarities, those specialities. In this manner, fancy leads people astray into the region of the trivial and colorful, making them neglect the valuable kernel. People do not realize that the study of history must enrich life and make it meaningful and worthwhile, rather than cater to the appetite of paltry facts and petty ideas. Wear the glasses of reverent adoration, bhakti, and steady dedication, shraddha, then the eye will endow you with pure wisdom that liberates you and grants you eternal bliss. You know, Swami, I think, felt that, I know that these guys are not going to read Ramayana with adoration and shraddha, so let me only explain them what the inner significance of Ramayana is. So, from reading Sandeha Nivarini, Ramkatha Rasavahini and some of his discourses, what exactly is Swami talking about? What is this essence or the juice of Ramayana that we are supposed to partake?
See, I feel Ramayana is like the ocean, and it's very difficult to point out any single, message or inspiration. But at the same time, when I say it's like an ocean, what I mean is anybody who wants whatever kind of wealth from benefit from Ramayana, if they dive deep enough, they'll find their own set of pearls, you know. So it's rich, it's abundant. It's not that, it's over 20,000 years. Thousands of people have dived into this ocean of Ramayana, picked up millions of pearls, and still there is infinitely more. You know, so it kind of caters to every level of life, every level of intellect, you can say a plethora of cultures also benefit from this epic called Ramayana.
Yes.
And which is evident that I think in more than 33 countries or so, Ramayana is famous and people actually read, and in their own way, in their own cultural inclination, they have kind of modified the Ramayana or, you know, benefited from it in their own way.
I think one I remember is the Indonesian group. They
yes.
came and performed a dance performance on the Ramayana.
Yes. Yeah.
In a very Indonesian way, there yes. in their cultural way.
Yeah, in fact, many of their cities
yes.
are named after, characters from Ramayana and the Puranas. There is an Ayodhya, a city is there, which is actually Ayodhya,
correct.
As pronounced in Sanskrit. So it's culturally, it has reached millions of people across the world, not just restricted to the subcontinent. And the question as to what could be the singular message of Ramayana would be difficult to answer. Yet at the same time, if not for our Bhagwan, it wouldn't be as apparent as it is now. For example, in the Sandeha Nivarini, I really find this book very cute, because in Sandeha Nivarini, it's basically doubt clearance
yes.
By Bhagwan, where he himself has penned down the questions as a devotee, a bhakta, and as Swami, he himself has answered those questions.
Yes.
So
yes.
I find it really cute, and it's amazing.
I think, dear listeners, if you have not read Sandeha Nivarini, we highly recommend this book. It is available
Absolutely.
For free on sssbpt.info. You just go to Vahinis on the site, click on it, you'll get all Swami's Vahinis available for download in PDF and other ebook formats like EPUB and MOBI format. So please go and read up Sandeha Nivarini. It is such a beautiful book.
In fact, it's got answers to many basic questions. I think what Swami very clearly foresaw was an earnest disciple or a student will have many questions in his mind. That's one thing, one way of looking at it. The other way is, one who is just doing a time pass might not get, you know, many deep questions. So he poses these questions himself,
yes.
so that, you know, you start wondering, yes, this is a question which I don't know an answer for, or I would also like to know what is this answer.
Yes, yes.
You know, so he kind of seeds these questions in our mind, which will help in our progress. So in the 13th chapter of Sandeha Nivarini, You know, Swami writes thus, and I quote henceforth, Bhakta, Swami, last time you spoke of Mahabharata war. In the same manner, does the Ramayana also happen in everyone's heart? Swami, undoubtedly, it does take place systematically and in the same sequence. Bhakta, then in what form does Rama come in this? Swami, the Atma is Rama. He has come in the character of Jeevi, wearing the dress called body. Bhakta, then being a Sankalpa Siddha, whose will prevails, and being omnipotent, who is all-powerful, why does he suffer so much? Swami, it is all his play, his leela, sport. What can be joy for him, and what can be suffering for him? He is Ananda Swarupa, embodiment of bliss, who knows neither. By his will, he can produce everything. He enacted the Ramayana on the stage of the theater of the world, with himself taking a role and showing each quality or guna as a separate form. Such a Ramayana is taking place in every heart. The Rama in the heart, the Atma Rama, is observing everything as witness. This is how Swami, this is how Swami, writes the sequence of question and answers in Sandeha Nivarani, and he's made it very clear that Ramayana is happening here and now in each one of our lives. And Swami goes on to explain the various characters of Ramayana and, what they represent. Maybe Chandu, I request you, in Ramakatha Rasavahini, I think in the first chapter of where Swami speaks about the inner significance of Ramayana, Swami lists out, what are the various characters of Ramayana and what do they represent. Can you please share those points?
Yes. In Ramakatha Rasavahini, in the chapter The Inner Meaning, Swami says, each brother, comrade, companion and collaborator of Rama is an example of a person saturated with dharma. Dasharatha is a representative of the merely physical with the 10 senses. The three qualities, gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, are the three queens. The four goals of life, the purusharthas, that is dharma, artha, kama, moksha, are the four sons. Lakshmana is the intellect, Sugriva is discrimination, Vali is despair, and Hanuman is the embodiment of courage. The bridge is built over the ocean of delusion. The three Rakshasa chiefs, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Vibhishana, are personifications of the rajasic, tamasic and sattvic qualities. Sita is the awareness of the universal divinity or Brahmajnana, which the individual must acquire and regain while undergoing travails in the crucible of life. And Swami ends that chapter by saying, make your heart pure and strong, contemplating the grandeur of the Ramayana, be established in the faith that Rama is the reality of your existence.
Chandu, now I would like to, bring our attention to this particular epic called Adhyatma Ramayana. It's kind of important to just lay little emphasis. There are two aspects of Rama which Swami is describing here.
Yes.
One is that of Atma Rama.
Yes.
That which is changeless aspect. The other example or the illustration which Swami gives of Rama is that of the Jivatma.
Yes.
Or the Jeevi, as we read out in the paragraph from the Sandeha Nivarani. So how do we understand these two aspects, the Atma Rama and the Jeeva Rama? In fact, from what you read out just now,
yes,
which is from Ramakatha Rasavahini,
yes,
it's very clear. Swami says that the Jeevatma, in association with Brahma Jnana,
yes,
has to realize itself, which is Atma Rama.
Yes.
Right? Here the Brahma Jnana is Sita. Jivatma again is the physical aspect of Rama. That is the individual aspect of Rama. But how do we understand this whole thing in our own parlance? That is, yes, how does it relate to me and my existence and the truth which I am seeking? So, Swami very clearly said that the Atma Rama is merely a witness. The evidence for this, or rather the substantiation of this, comes from Adhyatma Ramayana, where there is a dialogue between Mother Sita and Hanuman, where Sri Rama requests Mother Sita to explain to Hanuman, who is very curious to know what is the true principle behind Rama.
Correct.
And Mother Sita goes on to explain the whole concept of Adhyatma Ramayana. And I remember you sharing me the similar thing from Swami's discourse. Can you please read it out for
yes.
us?
Yes. So in a discourse that was delivered in 1961, Ram Navami of 1961, Swami said, "One day when Rama was crowned emperor at Ayodhya, that is after the defeat of Ravana, mm-hmm. every personage got some present or other before leaving the city. So Hanuman alone refused any material gift. And he asked Rama to explain to him the mystery of his life, which he had failed to understand in spite of the length and loyalty of his service. Rama then asked Sita to slake the thirst of Hanuman and reveal to him the secret of their careers. This is when Sita announced that she was primal nature or Moola Prakriti, the energy that agitates in all matter, or the Maya Shakti that transforms and transmutes it into all this variety that binds and blinds. The Ramayana, she said, was nothing but the play she designed."
In fact, the Adhyatma Ramayana presents this exact same thing in a little bit more dramatic way.
Okay.
In the sense that, you know, when Mother Sita starts explaining this whole thing to Hanuman, she narrates the whole story of Ramayana in some 12 or 14 verses. I'm not very sure about the number, but in very few verses, she explains the whole story. Like, you know, Dasharatha did the Putra Kameshti Yajna, and Sri Rama was born, and he went to school and studied with Sage Vasishta. Then Sage Vishwamitra took him ahead and, you know, to protect his Yajna. So after that, on the way, he killed Tartaki, and, you know, he blessed Ahalya. Then he got married to me. That is, Sita is narrating, so she says he got married to me. Then we both went to Ayodhya. Eventually, we were sent on exile for 14 years. And it was in the exile that Ravana abducted me. Rama, with the help of Sugriva and Hanuman, killed Ravana, rescued me, and we returned back to Ayodhya. And Rama was coronated. That is, Rama and Sita together were coronated as the emperor and the empress of Bharatvarsha of Ayodhya. So this whole thing she narrates in few verses.
Okay.
And she says it is only people with low intellect or less intelligence who will attribute this whole story to Rama. When I read this for the first time, I was stunned. And then she goes on to say that this is actually my story. And the Rama that who he really is, Mother Sita goes on to explain to Hanuman and says, the Rama who he really is, neither walks, neither talks, neither sleep, was never born, will never die. You know, he never fought, he never made peace, nothing.
It's like the description of Atma that Lord Krishna gave in
Bhagavad
Gita.
Exactly. Yes. Means he is just the absolute pure witness.
Yes.
You know, very nicely illustrated by the poem which Swami used to say, Brahmanandam Paramasukhatam. He explains that nature of the Brahman, which is the eternal witness. That is what Mother Sita was pointing to. Don't be misguided by the physical form of Rama. That physical form is also an accumulated form from Prakriti. It's a nature's body. So that is not the real Rama. This whole story, as you rightly read out from Bhagavan's own discourse in 1961 Ram Navami, Swami says that the physical form of even the avatar is Prakriti's part, isn't it?
Yes.
But the real Rama is like that. And Swami goes on to describe, Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim Dvandvatitam Trigunarahitam Tattvamasyadi Lakshyam Ekam Nityam Vimalam Achalam Sarvadi Sakshibhutam. He is the eternal witness. Bhavatitam Trigunarahitam Sadgurumtam Namami.
ज्ञानम् केवलम् ज्ञानमूर्तिम् द्वन्द्वातीतम् गगनसदृशम् तत्त्वमस्यादिलक्ष्यम् एकम् नित्यम् विमलमचलम् सर्वदिशाशिभूतम् भावातीतम् त्रिगुणरहितम् सद्गुरुत्वम् नमामि सद्गुरुत्वम् नमामि सद्गुरुत्वम् नमामि.
So he transcends all the gunas. There is literally nothing. He's supreme embodiment of bliss, the unchanging, unmovable, imperishable, pure, blemishless, eternal, supreme, eternal witness. That is the kind of description which Swami gives to the real nature of not just Rama, of all of us actually. Yes. Swami says that is our real nature.
Yes.
So that is what Mother Sita was referring to, that Rama is like that.
Yes.
And that is the real Rama. But the story that you see of the physical body of the Rama, which participates in various things, it is actually me. And when she's saying me, she's referring to herself not again as a physical form of Sita, but as Moola Prakriti, as Swami has beautifully described. So, that is where it starts, this distinction of who really Rama is. Rama is that eternal witness who is, if we assume ourselves to be the body and mind, he is within us.
Yes.
And he is the one who is all the time watching us. I remember the story of one of our students, who was very fond of watching these movies. And he used to go and, get interviews with Swami almost every day in Vrindavan at Whitefield. One such day he went home and he thought secretly he will watch a movie. And he saw that there was a photograph of Swami, which is actually a calendar. And as he was watching the movie, he felt very guilty that, Swami must be watching through this calendar. So what he did was, he turned the calendar upside down and continued watching the movie. But when he came back to Mandir the next day, Swami called him and said, "Hey, I know you were watching such and such movie," he said. And Swami went on to say, "Don't think Swami is just in the calendars, Means in the sense, Swami is not in the photographs. How does he know about everything? He's not just in the photographs. He is all pervasive. But then how does he know every thought of yours, every action of yours? It's because he is the eternal witness who is all the time present within us. Us in the sense, the body and mind that we think we are. So that is the real Swami, the eternal witness, who is much more closer to us than we are to ourselves.
Yes.
So this Atma Ramayana, or Atma in the sense being Self Ramayana, as literally translated, meaning that it has absolute relevance to myself and my life.
Yes.
It goes thus, and Swami, as he has explained there, says, the Atman is a witness of the apparent emergence of its shadow as the Jeevi. How do we understand this? It's very simple. See, we have a sun, right? And imagine we have some 20, 30 pots filled with water. Now what happens is, the reflection of the sun can be seen in the pot. It will look like just as it is on top. But the only difference is, if there is slight turbulence in the water, in the pot, the sun in the pot also will look as though it is shaky.
Yes.
Or if the water is very muddy and dirty and all that, you might not see a proper good reflection of the sun.
Yes.
You might see a hazy reflection, So this concept of jiva, where there is one sun in reality, its reflection can be seen in 30 or 20 other pots. This reflection of the sun in the 30 or 20 pots which are there in the water, that reflection is called the jivatma, and the sun is paramatma. In a sense, they are not different. The reflection is of the object, which is the sun. But in this case, the reflection cannot be considered as real. It is only an imagination, or it is only apparently there because of the water.
Yes.
Suppose you say you remove all the water from the pot, will there be a reflection? There will be nothing, right?
Yes.
In the same way, it is in presence of certain faculties that the unending supreme witness, the Parabrahman as we call it, the Atman, that Atma Rama becomes the Jivatma, yes, or assumes a reflective form of Jivatma,
yes,
in the presence of certain instruments. Just as in this example, where there is a pot and there is water, you have a reflection of the sun. In the same way, in the presence of certain physical entity like the pot and certain subtle entity like the water, there will be a reflection of the Atma Rama in the form of a reflected sun, which is called Jivatma. So, what is this pot and what is this water when we talk about Ramayana and it's relevant to us? This pot or the physicality of the vessel is nothing but the body with Dashendriyas, that is the 10 sense organs, 5 Karmendriyas, organs of action, and 5 Jnanendriyas, the organs of perception. And this Dashendriyas, Swami says, is comparable to the one of the prime characters in Ramayana, which is Sri Rama's physical father, who is Dasharatha. So Dasharatha represents this physical body of Dashendriyas, which is the pot in this example. And the three queens, that is Kausalya, Sumitra and Kaikeyi, represent the three gunas. And these three gunas are nothing but aspects of mind. They are gunas in a practical understanding, are but vrittis. Vrittis means thoughts.
Yes.
And which we will go in little detail later. But these vrittis or thoughts is what forms the mind.
Yes.
And mind is hence called a bundle of thoughts, you know. So it is in the presence of this water of vrittis, which is made of the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, which is represented by the three queens, in the presence of this water of mind, in the presence of the physical vessel of Dasharatha, the emergence of Rama happens. Rama the Jivi, as Swami explains.
Yes.
Jivi in the sense Jivatma.
Jivatma, yes.
So it's a very beautiful and simple analogy to understand how, just as the sun is reflected in the pot, the Atma Rama is reflected as Jivatma. Under what conditions? When there is a physicality of a physical body, as it is in the pot, and when there is the subtle element which can reflect the sun of the mind, which is in this case the three queens represented by Trigunas.
Yes.
So that is how the beginning of this entity or the birth of this Jivi happens in the world.
And probably at this time we will take a short break. Dear listeners, we will be back with the story of Atma Ramayanam, that is a Ramayanam as a story of each and every one of us, that is a story of the Jivatma moving towards the Paramatma, after this short break.
Jay Kausalya Nandana Ram, Paramananda Ananda Ram. Kausalya Nandana Ram, Paramananda Ananda Ram. Jay Kausalya Nandana Ram, Paramananda Ananda. जय कौसल्यानन्द नराम परमानन्द आनन्द राम.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Love to Love. I am Chandu Vijay, and today we are discussing Atma Ramayana, the Ramayana that is being played in each and every one of our lives. With me in the studios is Brother Sai Giridhar, Research Scholar, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Prashanthi Nilayam Campus. So, Giridhar, let's continue from where we stopped.
Coming back to the Gunas, which we were discussing some time back, it is important to understand what are Gunas in a very practical way, which is relevant to us as an individual.
Yes.
So, you know, Swami says that Kausalya represents Sattvaguna, Kaikeyi represents Rajoguna, and Sumitra represents Tamoguna. So what are these Gunas and how do each of these queen reflect this quality?
Yes.
Let's give some thought into this. The Gunas, as we discussed earlier, are nothing but vrittis. Vrittis means thoughts. They have the shape or they have the expression as thoughts. So what is a sattva guna or a sattvic thought? Sattva guna or sattvic thought is nothing but a thought which pertains with the welfare of others.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. Suppose, God forbid, but suppose we have a neighbor who is not in talking terms with us. And suddenly, the neighbor has an emergency. And there is nobody else to take them to the hospital or something like that. You know, though we are not in talking terms for whatever reasons, a sattvic thought or a sattva guna will express itself in this manner. What I would do is immediately rush and, you know, offer him the help and kind of take him to the hospital, do the needful and make all the arrangements. So in spite of the difference of opinion for whatever reasons, you know, a sattvic quality, a sattva guna will put aside all kinds of differences and will always look at benefit for others.
Mm-hmm.
So a thought which pertains to benefit for others primarily is a sattvic thought, which is a reflection of sattva guna.
Okay.
The second guna is rajoguna. Rajoguna expresses itself in rajasic vrittis or rajasic thoughts. And these rajasic thoughts are nothing but thoughts pertaining to my welfare, my growth,
yes,
my improvement, my benefit. You know, how do I improve my comfort? How do I improve my conveniences? So it always kind of inspires me to do things for my personal welfare. And this my could be a small expansion to my family at best, you know.
Yes, yes.
So those kind of thoughts which kind of facilitate self needs or self gratification, these kind of thoughts, they are rajasic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see people will be rajasic also, kind of is synonymous with entropy or, you know, rapid movement and all that. The reason is, once you have a desire and you want to fulfill, it will not leave you at peace.
Correct.
You know, you
yes.
will be constantly in motion and action to kind of fulfill your desire, isn't it? Because it's for you.
Yes, yes.
So, rajasic thought or the rajasic quality expresses itself in rajasic vrittis. And these vrittis are of this nature, which kind of caters to my development, my growth, my improvement and comforts and all that. Then we come to the tamasic.
And in this story, yes, it is represented by Mother Kaikeyi.
Kaikeyi, yes.
Yes.
Okay. We'll come to how each one represents
sure,
the
sure.
other, because
yes.
it's very subtle and one cannot but, you know, marvel and, you know, dance in ecstasy, just wondering at the supreme intelligence of our beloved Lord, in the sense how he has, named these characters against these gunas.
Yes.
It's very, very subtle. And,
Even though on the face of it, it may look very contradictory.
It will, because how can you think Sumitra is of tamasic nature?
Really true. And
you know,
I've heard Swami giving 2-3 discourses exclusively on Sumitra, where he just kept on praising Sumitra.
Yeah, because she was of that quality.
Yes.
But to understand that Sumitra is of tamasic nature, one would say Kaikeyi might be tamasic.
Correct.
Because tamas, like coming now to tamas, you know, tamas is associated with destruction.
Correct. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
tamas expresses itself in terms of tamasic vrittis or tamasic thoughts, thoughts that are pertaining to one's own destruction or others' destruction.
Yes.
For simple example, somebody who has bad habits, you know, there is a statutory warning on every packet of cigarette and also on alcohol and all that, that it is going to cause bad health, ill yes. health, lung cancer and all those things. But vrittis that would kind of, you know, inspire you to go ahead with such habits because of your vasanas and all that, which will continue to inspire to destroy yourself. What's happening? Systematically you are destroying your body. Body which is a gift of God, gift of nature, systematically you are destroying. And there are vrittis. Think of somebody who has now consumed alcohol, you know, heavily. He is going to go about destroying everything else.
True,
the furniture,
true.
The things, he's going to hurt people.
Destroy
the family, circumstances, financially, emotionally.
Correct.
So these vrittis which cause self-destruction and also destruction of others. It might not be this extreme. It could be as simple as, you know, somebody who's too lazy, does not, you know, get into an active routine in life. What happens? His body is becoming more and more rigid.
Yes.
Which means what? Slowly the cells are dying. Because they are not put to regular use, they are not used. Any instrument if you do not use, it's going to get spoiled, right? So which means slowly you are ensuring that okay. your physical body, your mind also for this, for that matter, if it's not put to use, to innovate, to be creative, it is going to stagnate. And even those kind of thoughts which lead to these circumstances or these habits, they also are destroying you in different ways. So these vrittis, these kind of thoughts are expression of the tamasic quality. So it's very clear from this that sattvic means welfare, thoughts associated with welfare of others, rajasic means my welfare, my comfort, and tamasic means destroy, means yes. either me or others or whatever,
correct, correct.
You know, that way. Now how do you relate this to the three queens?
Yes.
They apparently are ideals, perfect ideals, as you know, as the three queens Swami says, you will not find anybody like that.
Yes.
You know, though they were three queens of Dasharatha, they hardly had any difference of opinion, and we also know how they shared the payasam.
Correct.
You know, between themselves when Sumitra was in a state of crisis.
Yes.
And all that. How do we fit in this picture of Sattva, Rajas and Tamas? Here is where the brilliance, the extraordinary brilliance of our Lord comes into play. And see, Kausalya, it's little simpler to understand, all her thoughts was always pertaining to the welfare of others. In fact, Swami says that Dasharatha spent very little time with Kausalya after he got married to Kaikeyi, right? So she did not get enough attention for a long period, that is a large part of her life. She was kind of left to herself. In spite of that, she was all the time active and worried about the welfare of others. Even when Rama had to go to the forest, her thoughts were of this direction. She said, if you have to go, go. I know that there might be some divine purpose for you, but take me also along with you.
Yes.
So which means what? Her vrittis were either for the benefit of others or it was turned Godward. Means her love for Rama was, you know, unmatchable.
Yes.
So her thoughts were either turned towards God or for the welfare of others. So that represents a sattvic quality. Now we come to the second personality, which is Kaikeyi.
Yes.
Which is Rajasic. Mother Kaikeyi, she exhibited the quality of asking the kingdom for her son. And if you see how this was motivated, Manthara implanted a thought in her. She said, see, if Rama is going to be coronated now, obviously Kausalya will become premier, that is the, you know, she will be the queen and she will have highest importance because Rama will place her on the top naturally because being his mother. I mean, this is how Manthara poisoned. Rama did not have any discrimination for any of his mothers, but this is how she poisoned her mind. And she said Rama will, you know, give more importance to Kausalya for obvious reasons. And then what will happen to you? Because we all know that Lakshmana is closest to Rama in terms of serving Rama. So Lakshmana also will be given prime importance, which means Sumitra will also get her place. The only one left out is Bharata. Bharata anyway is so surrender to Rama, he loves Rama so much, he will be his servant. So if Bharata becomes servant, you will also become servant. So this sense of insecurity was kind of implanted in the mind of Kaikeyi, and she yielded to it. So her vrittis there represent that, you know, what will happen to me, my safety, my security, my position, and my son's position. You know, so this kind of a vritti is expressed by Kaikeyi, and she immediately reacts in a certain way, which ensures that she asks for her son to be made the king or the crown prince, and so that she herself could be in a secure position in the kingdom. You know, so this kind of vritti is what we call as rajasic quality, or a thought inspired by rajasic quality. So hence, Mother Kaikeyi can be considered as a rajasic personality. And the last queen, which is the most mind-boggling thing, is how is Sumitra?
Yes.
Tamasic in nature. Now we all know Sumitra itself means Sumitra. That is good friend,
yes,
of the entire world. That's how Swami praises Sumitra. And she is also the one, Swami has told, who knew about the avataric nature of Rama. Not everybody knew. There are very few people during the Treta Yuga, during the advent of Rama, who were completely aware that Rama is an incarnation of divinity. And Sumitra mother was one such person. So how do we understand the tamasic attribution to such a pious and wonderful person? See, tamas has to be understood very clearly. All these three gunas are required and essential, and hence there is no single guna which is good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
All these are tools. For example, the creation cannot happen or it cannot be sustained if three processes don't happen properly. What is this? Creation, sustenance, and destruction. All these three are tools for furthering the creation only. If anything that is created sustains for too long a time, it stagnates. It starts, you know, causing trouble to everybody else. And we have seen numerous such stories. There were great Rakshasas who did tremendous penance to remain immortal. And they at least sought boon, to the extent that they will live long enough. You know, they created such situations. And we know what trouble they created for the world. And that is how many incarnations had to come. And this is a very common thing. If any thought or idea stagnates for a long time, it is going to cause trouble to people. Right? So this creation, sustenance, and destruction is a natural process. It happens in nature day in and day out. Right? So all these gunas are to be looked at as tools. So let us look at what is this tool called tamas. The tool of tamas is that of destruction. How do I understand this? Suppose you take a knife. This knife is a tool. And this tool can be used by different people with different attitudes for different ends. Suppose a person who has a good attitude, like a surgeon, who wants to, you know, cure a person of his tumor or a cancer, and he has to operate, he has to use this knife. Now, because his attitude and intention is pure, the knife, which is a weapon that cuts, does not start massaging the patient, isn't it? The knife will continue to do its dharma, which is to cut. So, a tamasic tool will continue to do its dharma, which is to destroy. But if it is used in the right hands, yeah, or if it is used in the right company or right purpose, this tamasic tool can be put for lokakalya, and also it can be used. For example, when wars are fought, when destruction happens in war, even that is tamoguna. But if Arjuna did not do that, how would the establishment of dharma happen? If Ravana was not killed by Rama, how would the establishment of dharma happen for lokakalyana? So tamas becomes a tool. Now coming to Mother Sumitra. It is very difficult to understand Mother Sumitra otherwise, except from her instructions which she gave to her sons. She had two sons, Lakshmana and Shatrughna. Shatrughna itself means destroyer of enemies.
Yes.
And Lakshmana is the other son who is known for his aggression. And what is the instruction which Mother Sumitra gives to both the sons? She tells Lakshmana, you have to protect Rama and Sita. She tells Shatrughna, you have to protect Bharata. That is your dharma. When we say protect, what does it mean? Those days in Treta Yuga, there were many wild animals which were uncontrollable. There were many demonic forces which were again uncontrollable. To protect them means you have to kill the animals, wild animals which are causing harm to people, and you have to kill the demonic forces.
Yes.
That is the meaning of protection, right? So her instruction to her sons, both her sons were that you should use this tamasic energy to protect the Ramakarya, which is for Loka Kalyana. So that is exactly what they did. Shatrughna protected the kingdom of Ayodhya when Rama and Sita were in forest along with Lakshmana, and Bharata also was in Nandigrama, you know, away from the kingdom. Who protected the kingdom of Ayodhya from the enemies? It was Shatrughna who protected, and he used the power of tamas or destructive energy to protect the safety of his kith and kin, of the kingdom and all that. In the same way, Lakshmana in the forest, he protected Mother Sita from wild animals and also from demonic forces. Now, with respect to us, what does it signify? Lakshmana represents intellect, as Swami has said,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So this intellect, which can discriminate, should protect us from animality and demonic nature. Yes. So what is animality and demonic nature? Swami says, you are not one but three. The one which we think we are, which is the body. The one which others think we are, which is the mind. And the one we really are, which is the self or the Atman. Now Swami says, if you identify yourself only with the body, it is animality. If you identify yourself only with the mind, which is filled with desires and various tendencies and vasanas, it is demonic in nature. If you integrate body, mind and atma, it is humanity. If you transcend body and mind and know that you are only the atma, it is divinity. This beautiful definition Swami has given. So this intellect in us, the buddhi, discriminative power, should constantly remind us, I am not the body, I am not the mind. That is the protection that it renders.
Mm.
So any vritti or thought that is dragging me towards the senses, or that is dragging me towards my desires or memories of the past, and you know, making my life miserable, the intellect has to destroy those such thoughts, which are tamasic in nature. So tamas in this case is a tool which can be used for Loka Kalyana and our self Kalyana also.
Mm.
That is for our own welfare. So that is how we understand these three queens or these three wonderful mothers, how they represent Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. But you have to notice here how each of them used their qualities only for Loka Kalyana. Not to miss the point.
Yes.
Mother Kaikeyi also asked for this boon. She was of course influenced by Mantara, which was a divine master plan. But she was approached by Sri Rama, as Swami explains, and he said, for Loka Kalyana, you have to ask for these three boons. These two boons.
Correct. Yes.
That I be sent to the forest. So even her expression of her Rajoguna, in terms of asking for her son to be made the king, is also with the perspective of Loka Kalyana.
Dasharata Nandana Dayavi Rama Shri Ramachandra Jaya Ramachandra Raghuveera Ranadheera Raghukula Rama. Shri Ramachandra Jaya Ramachandra
Ramachandra Jaya Ramachandra
Shri Ramachandra Jaya Ramachandra
Ramachandra Jaya Ramachandra
Raghuveera Ranadheera Raghukula Rama.
ರಘುವೀರ ರಣಧೀರ ರಘುಕುಲ ರಾಮ ರಘುವೀರ ರಣಧೀರ ರಘುಕುಲ ರಾಮ ಶ್ರೀರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ
ರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ
ದಶರಥ ನಂದನ ದಯಾಭಿರಾಮ
ದಶರಥ ನಂದನ
ರಘುವೀರ ರಣಧೀರ ರಘುಕುಲ ರಾಮ
ರಘುವೀರ ರಣಧೀರ ರಘುಕುಲ ರಾಮ
ಶ್ರೀರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ
ರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ
ದಶರಥ ನಂದನ ದಯಾಭಿರಾಮ
ದಶರಥ ನಂದನ
ರಘುಕುಲ ರಾಮ
ರಘುವೀರ
ರಘುವೀರ ರಣಧೀರ ರಘುಕುಲ ರಾಮ
ರಘುವೀರ ರಣಧೀರ ರಘುಕುಲ ರಾಮ
ಶ್ರೀರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ರಾಮಚಂದ್ರ
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Love to Love. I am Chandu Vijay. With me in the studios is Brother Sai Giridhar, Research Scholar, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And today we are discussing Atma Ramayana, the Ramayana that is being played in each and every one of our lives. Till now we were discussing about the three gunas of Sattva, Rajas and Tamas and trying to make sense of how the three queens of King Dasharatha represented them. So now let's take it forward from there.
Let us now trace the journey of Jivatma as it goes ahead. In this case, the journey of Rama, which is Ramayana. The next thing that happens is, you know, Sri Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, Shatrughna, they come up to an age where they are to be educated. So Dasharatha and the queens send these four little princes to the hermitage of sage Vashishtha. Now, it is important to understand who sage Vashishtha is. In fact, Swami in Ramgatha Rasvayani says, Vashishtha is Brahma Rishi. Brahma Rishi means one who has known himself as the Parabrahman himself. With that experiential Brahma Jnana, Anubhav Janya Jnana, he still continues to live in a physical form for the welfare of the humanity. Obviously, he knows that the whole world is an illusion for him. He revels in the Sachidananda that he really is. The question comes, in fact, Parikshit asks this question to Sage Sukha as to why these great Brahmajnanis, these great Maharishis and Brahmarishis like Vashishtha and others were associated with the kingdom. you know, with the kingdom's activities and all those things, because they had no attachment to anything anyway. Then Sage Sukha says, you have asked a very pertinent question. And he goes on to explain that the main purpose of these sages being associated with the king was, in the hands of king those days lay the welfare of the entire praja or the subjects. Thousands and millions were nurtured by the kings. So if the kings were given the right perspective and right understanding and the right tools to make good decisions for the welfare of all the subjects, then it would ensure Loka Kalyana, or thousands of people, lakhs of people would be benefited by that. That was one reason why the sages, they never stayed with the king. They would stay in their hermitages, but regularly, you know, they would be the advisors of the king. The second aspect is the great Brahma Rishis like Sage Vasishta and Vishwamitra, they all knew that the avatar of the age in the Treta Yuga, they knew that Sri Rama is going to be born in the dynasty of Raghu, and hence they decided to kind of guide the dynasty from a very long period. If you see the history of Sage Vasishta, Dilipa and Aja, and you know, it goes on and on. They have been guiding the entire Ikshvaku clan literally with the idea that when the avatar of the age comes, they will get the chance of a physical interaction. Just like the Gopikas, who are all realized masters, great sages, who had this one inclination that they should enjoy the physical incarnation of the Lord. You know, it is for that purpose that these sages, who are really Brahma Rishis, they already know that they are Parabrahman. They have the experiential wisdom of that, and yet they continued to limit themselves in the physicality only for Loka Kalyana and to enjoy the incarnation of the Lord time and again. So, in this case, Sage Vasishta's hermitage or ashram was the place where the four princes went for their education. In the first phase of their education, Sage Vasishta played the role of a simple guru. When I say simple guru, what I mean here is, a guru is one who is able to remove your ignorance. As Swami says, guru means one who removes ignorance. So, a simple guru is one who is able to remove your ignorance about certain subjects. Like today you have, you know, finance guru, marketing guru, you have ethics guru, you
gadget gurus.
So, those are people who have the expertise to kind of remove your ignorance on certain subjects and enlighten you on them. In the same way, Sage Vasishta played the role of such a guru, where he trained Rama and his other three brothers in various aspects of knowledge. You know, Rama in fact became an expert in 34 art forms, all of which he had learned, many of which from Sage Vasishta. So he played the role, he taught them about the purusharthas of life, that is dharma, artha, kama, moksha, how one should lead a perfect human life. And all the four princes assimilated this knowledge with absolute ease and very, very quickly. And they were ready to lead a perfect life of a perfect human being, you know. So that manushyatvam, they were able to reach the pinnacle of it in hardly any time. So Sage Vasishta then blessed them and sent them back to the kingdom. So once they reached there, we all know that immediately Vishwamitra comes there. He is also a Brahma Rishi, certified by Sage Vasishta himself, you know. So, Vishwamitra comes there and he asks the king to send Rama and Lakshmana along with him to protect a yajna which is again for Loka Kalyana. Right? The first thing that Vidya should confer is a zeal to serve the society. As Swami says, education should help you in serving the society better. So, Sage Vasishta also had taught them that whatever I have taught you, you should put it into practice. And he created in them, or you can say he instigated in them, a zeal to serve the mankind with the knowledge that they have. So, Vishwamitra immediately comes and asks Dasharatha to give Rama and Lakshmana to him to protect the yajna which was meant for Loka Kalyana. The inner story behind this is, behind this whole episode of protecting the yajna, there was a twofold objective. here slowly we will see what has happened prior to Vishwamitra coming and taking Rama and Lakshmana. As Swami describes in Ramgatha Rasavahini, after they returned from the hermitage, these four princes were sent on a pilgrimage nationwide along with the minister Sumanta. And Rama and Lakshmana toured the whole place and they saw all the pilgrim spots, they visited different regions of the country, they understood the culture of the country, they mingled with people, you know, got into their emotions and literally lived with the plethora of humanity, the variety that you find in this great nation, and they understood the problems and the suffering of the people. And in that course, when they returned to Ayodhya, suddenly Dasharatha saw a marked change in both Rama and Lakshmana. These two brothers especially would lock themselves up in their room. They would not eat in time. They would show absolute dispassion towards anything that is materialistic or worldly. And they would hardly speak even to their mother or father. So this was a great matter of concern for Dasharatha. So immediately what he does is he summons Sumanta, minister who accompanied Rama and Lakshmana, and he says, what is the problem? Did anything happen during the pilgrimage? And Sumanta describes and says, my lord, whatever the princes wanted, we gave it to them. In fact, they had no selfish desires. They only wanted the welfare of the people. They were using all their skill and expertise they have learned in their schooling for the welfare of the subjects. In fact, wherever they saw that shelter was required, they asked us to provide the shelter and we did the needful. Wherever they felt temples need to be constructed, we did the needful. Wherever water was of scarcity, where wells have to be dug or, you know, water sources had to be diverted through canals, we did whatever they asked for, and whatever they asked was only in the direction of welfare of the society and others. They never asked anything for themselves. But I am sure that we have fulfilled all their needs, so I really don't know why they are in this state. So Sumanta said, let me go and find out, let me speak to them and see if I can find a solution. So Sumanta goes and spends some time with Rama and Lakshmana. And he finds that they are in a state of deep inquiry as to what is the purpose of this life? What is suffering? Why does man suffer? What is the secret of overcoming this suffering? You know, in terms of Jeevi, that is the life of a Jeevatma, when we go through the travails and struggles in life, we see that these questions often prop up in our mind, you know. And here there is a beautiful aspect which Shankaracharya explains, which is seen in Ramayana, which is relevant to each one of us. Adi Shankara says, the qualifications that we need to have for becoming a Jeevan Mukta or realizing who we really are is Manushyatvam, Mumukshatvam, Mahapurusha Samashraya. In this, Manushyatvam, or reaching the pinnacle of humanity, of human excellence, was already achieved by Rama during the course of his schooling, which he learned from Sage Vasishtha, and eventually during the pilgrimage. He found expression to the perfection of his character at a very early age. Manushyatvam he achieved. In fact, Rama followed the fourfold principle, which Swami often says, for the achievement of human character or perfection in human character. That is, Tyaja Durjana Samsargam, Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam, Kuru Punya Mahoratram, Smara Nitya Anityatam. Tyaja Durjana Samsargam, avoid bad company. For a young sadhaka, it is the most important step. Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam. All through the pilgrimage, Rama and Lakshmana always sought after satsang. They would go and find any rishi, any sage, any person with great experience, sit and listen to them and discuss with them various topics of life. So that satsang was all the time in their mind, and they would always seek for that. Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam. Kuru Punya Mahoratram. Morning and night they were engaged in serving the subjects. Wherever they went, you know, they would go around and serve the needs of the people. Whatever was their requirement, they would fulfill. And with great love and compassion, they really rendered an amazing seva to the subjects that, or anybody whom they saw during their pilgrimage. Kuru Punyam Ahoratra, morning and night they were engaged in Satkarmas or Seva or service to the mankind. Smara Nitya Anityatam. This was a unique thing which happened during the pilgrimage. Smara Nitya Anityatam. They started wondering what is temporary and what is permanent. But the pilgrimage brought in a change in him. That was Mumukshatvam. Mumukshatvam is desire for moksha. Or moksha here means mohakshaya. He developed an inherent desire to know who he really is. To kind of, he lost all interest in the world. There was a distaste that he found in the world. And there was an inner calling which was very, very strong and powerful in Rama, which had brought him to that state. In fact, just to bring our attention to Swami's life, if we remember Swami's childhood, there was a period of time in Swami's life where Swami was exactly like this.
Yes.
And all his family members wondered what happened to him. He used to talk high philosophy according to them. You know, they thought he was talking high philosophy and he would be silent. He would not mingle with his friends.
And they thought it is because of a scorpion bite.
Scorpion bite, yes. And what not, you know.
So correct.
Similar misunderstandings have happened then in Treta Yuga and even now, you know, with Swami.
You know, Swami said that in the story they say that a scorpion bit me and then that's how I became like that. He says, let 100 scorpions bite you, let's see what happens.
Exactly, you know. So that is not a scorpion bite. It is actually when you know that the world actually is poisonous.
Correct, yes.
You know, the sense of mumukshatvam comes. Why would you be attached to poison or anything that destroys, yes. You know. So that temporary nature of life, you know, it happened to Buddha also.
Yes.
You know, when he saw a sick man, an old man, a dead body, you know, these questions came in him. You know, these questions are trigger points for that mumukshatvam, where, you know, you start yearning to know what is this life, what is the purpose of this life, how do I know who I am, what is my source, where did I come from?
Yes.
All these questions have their root in this kind of... It was very similar to Sri Rama at that point of time. In the journey of a Jivatma, it is very similar as well. When we, first step that we need to achieve, Swami says, is destroy animality.
Mm-hmm.
There is animal qualities in us, like lust, greed, hatred. You have to destroy and nurture humanity. And when we develop human qualities and reach the pinnacle of manushatvam, that is when we are prepared for mumukshatvam. We are in a position to kind of understand and assimilate these very, very difficult and intense questions of our life. So when this happened, Sumanta said, the minister of Dasharatha, he said, I can't do anything with this. This is not a subject matter for any of us. Let us approach sage Vasishtha. So when they approached sage Vasishtha, Vasishtha said, let me have a look into this. And he sat with Rama and Lakshmana. And the discourse or the discussion that followed between sage Vasishtha and Rama is what is called as Rama Gita or Yoga Vasishtha. And at this point of time, sage Vasishtha was not playing a role of an ordinary guru. He was playing the role of Satguru, who gives you a direct realization or experience of who you really are. That was the question of Rama. Who am I?
Yes.
Where did I come from? What is this world? Why is there suffering? What is the secret of coming out of all this suffering? So the answer to all that question was only one, to know yourself. And when the Jivatma is now literally kind of pining to know, that mumukshatvam is at its peak, is pining to know who am I and the various other questions of life, that is when the Sadguru makes his entry. Now the sage Vasishtha is the Sadguru in our life, and what he does is he gives Yoga Vasishtha, and he allows the Jivatma Rama to understand that he is Atma Rama. He gives him an expression, a direct experience of what it is, of what Atma Rama he really is. So with that glimpse, Rama is now more capable and equipped for constant integration. This is not the absolute,
yes.
But he is having the necessary tools for realization. The Jivatma is having the necessary tools for realization. So now what happens is, he has to be tested.
Yes.
A guru, as Swami says, a guru is not a guru if he does not test his disciple. He has given him a glimpse, but he wants to test and ensure that he has absolutely understood. And it's not just an intellectual understanding, but it is a deep experiential understanding.
Yes.
The guru tests and sees. So what did he do? He created the scene. The Sadguru created the scene that Vishwamitra had come there and he had asked Dasharatha to give his son to him. Now Vishwamitra is also Brahmarishi.
Correct.
So Sadguru is not a physical form. Atma Rama himself is Sadguru.
Yes.
And this whole journey is his own Leela, as Swami started the whole thing. It is his sport. So Atma Rama is only Sadguru. He takes various forms like Shirdi Sai, Satya Sai, of Krishna, of Rama. These are all beautiful forms of one Sadguru. That Sadguru is Atma Rama, who was described as Brahmanandam Paramasukatam.
Yes.
That one does not change at all. So Sadguru in another form of Vishwamitra approached and asked Dasharatha to give his son. Now Dasharatha is feeling insecure. Why? Because Dasharatha means the body.
Correct.
If the Jivatma listens to the Sadguru and dissolves itself, its identity, the body will remain useless.
Yes.
In the sense, it loses its significance. Now all the life, Jiva is living because of the presence of the body.
Yes.
Because of the identification with body. So the body is kind of here scared of, or it is having this insecurity. What will happen if this identification gets cut? You know, so Dasharatha says, I cannot send my son. If you want, I will come and fight. Vishwamitra says, you are useless. I don't want you. I want your son.
Yes.
So which means what? The Jivatma is ready. He is being tested here. Whether the attachment to his body or his mind is going to prevent him from recognizing who he really is. But then sage Vishwamitra, finally Vasishta, again Brahmarishi, who is also the form of Sadguru, advises and says, no, it is for your Kalyana only. Understand that this is for your Kalyana, that it is happening, and send Rama. He is not ordinary. You send him. So then he goes with sage Vishwamitra, and in the process, oh, we all know the story of how he protected from Maricha and Subahu, the two demons, the yajna which was being conducted at Siddhashrama. But the important thing in this journey with respect to the Jiva,
yes,
is where the grace of Sadguru dawns on the Jivatma for him to realize his self. Here it is shown in the journey of Sri Rama where he meets three types of women.
Yes.
And the way he deals with each one of them, Swami describes, is the way a sadhaka will also be tested and seen how is he dealing with them.
So he meets Tataki, Ahalya and finally Mother Sita.
Exactly. And I'm sure, Chandu, you remember how he deals with each one of them. Can you just share?
Rama kills Tataki.
Yes.
He transforms Ahalya.
Yes.
And accepts Sita or marries Sita.
Absolutely right. So Tataki here represents the Tamoguna.
Yes.
Again, we have already discussed in detail what is this Tamoguna.
Yes.
And she was using the Tamasic aspect to literally cause harm to others, not for Loka Kalyan.
Correct.
So it was becoming a nuisance and lot of trouble for many people. So basically what that means is such vrittis will come in a sadhaka even after the Sadguru gives you a glimpse of the Brahmajnana. He's not given you the full, he's given you a glimpse. Even after that, these kind of vrittis will come. That is, tamasic thoughts, rajasic thoughts, sattvic thoughts, all will come.
Yes.
To test and see whether you have actually tasted your real nature or not. So, what did Rama did? He vanquished the tamoguna, means he destroyed the tamoguna. Such vrittis he did not encourage.
Correct.
Which will cause destruction to himself or to others. Then was Rajoguna, which is represented by Ahalya. Swami or Rama transformed. Here in this case, we are talking about the Jivatma's journey.
Yes.
Rama transformed Ahalya, which means Rajoguna or thoughts pertaining to one's own welfare, if it comes, it has to be transformed to Sattvaguna. That is, movement I feel. Suppose you say, we are some 50 or 100 of us, we are going on a pilgrimage. And we are on a long journey and I am feeling very hungry and I feel, no, I should immediately eat and satiate my hunger. I can immediately transform that thought and feel, 99 other people are also traveling with me. So they all also must be tired and hungry. So let me make some arrangement for everybody. So how a Rajo Guna or a thought which is Rajasic in nature of self-preservation, self-motivation, gratification can be converted for the good of others.
Yes.
You know, so this is these kind of vrittis. So this will be the test of Sadhguru. He is constantly watching to see how you are dealing with the situations. And this is the Rajoguna that he encounters. And Sattvaguna, which is always looking at others' welfare. When such thoughts come, Swami says, immediately accept and implement.
Yes.
When such good thoughts come about others' welfare, don't delay. Immediately accept and implement, he says. So that is how Rama accepts Sita as his consort or wife.
Yes.
And this marriage, Swami says, here the Sita represents the Sattva Guna. Sita also represents Moola Prakriti in her cosmic sense. Sita is also Brahma Jnana in our personal sense.
Yes.
So there are three aspects of Sita which we have to look at here. And in this case, Rama accepts Sattva Guna as his own. And he takes her to Ayodhya. So this is the journey of Rama, explained in Balakanda. In terms of the Jivatma after reaching the pinnacle of Manushyatvam, being excellence as a human being, in human character, develops Mumukshyatvam by observing keenly the life and, you know, being in sync with the suffering of people so much that he develops Mumukshyatvam. The various basic questions of life and existence and who am I? And when that is ready, the fruit is almost ripe, the Sadguru comes and he gives you a glimpse of the Brahma Jnana or Atma Jnana, which is nothing but who I really am.
Yes.
A glimpse of that.
Yes.
But it doesn't end there. After that, the Jivatma or the Sadhaka is tested to see how he deals with life. It is not made permanent yet. It's not made a constant integrated awareness. There is just an awareness of who I am. And then here we see how in the journey of Rama, the Jivatma, he completely rejects the Tamoguna or destroys it. And he transforms the Rajoguna and he accepts the Sattvaguna.
Even though the Atma Ramayanam doesn't end there, unfortunately, the show has to end because I think we are running out of time. So we will continue the story as a part two. Next week, continuing the journey of the Jivatma to Paramatma in the form of the Atma Ramayana.
Shut up, లక్ష్మణ
సేవిత లావణ్యరా రావణ మదన రణధీరరా
శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
రామ రామ రామ రామ రఘురామ
రామ 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 రఘురామ
ఘన శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
పత్తి వాస పరందామ ఎంగల్ రామ
పత్తి వాస పరందామ ఎంగల్ రామ
ఈశ్వరాంబ ప్రియపుత్ర సాయి రామ
ఈశ్వరాంబ ప్రియపుత్ర సాయి రామ
రామ రామ రామ రఘురామ ఘన శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
శ్యామ రామ 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 రఘురామ ఘన శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
పత్తి వాస పరందామ ఎంగల్ రామ
పత్తి వాస పరందామ ఎంగల్ రామ
ఈశ్వరాంబ ప్రియపుత్ర సాయి రామ
ఈశ్వరాంబ ప్రియపుత్ర సాయి రామ
రామ రామ రామ రామ రఘురామ ఘన శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
రామ రామ రామ రామ రఘురామ ఘన శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామ
రామ రామ రామ రామ రఘురామ ఘన శ్యామ 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 సుందర సాయి రామా.